And welcome to another edition of the Mojo Break Dugout Session. Cody here alongside me is Doug, as always, and we are in the home stretch of the 2020 regular season. Feels like it just started yesterday. Well, because it kind of did. We're almost 60 games through this 60-game sprint. A lot of teams clinched postseason spots over the weekend. Felt like an abundance of teams like I'd never seen before, which I guess is going to happen when you have 16 teams making the playoffs and only 60 games to do so. As we take a quick look at the current postseason standings as of today's recording, the American League picture is almost set, pretty much. There is a little bit of a fight for that eighth spot with the Mariners, of all teams, still in this thing. The National League, you've got a bunch of teams just vying for the last four spots. Looks like about seven teams vying for that last four spots in the postseason for Major League Baseball. But playoffs, we're going to get to that later. We're going to talk more about teams and players that have been on a slide this year, but a bit of a disappointing year here in 2020. See if they can bounce back in 2021. But first off, let's talk about the hobby. Let's talk about Bowman Chrome, some of the hottest names that have been coming out of that set since it's been open over the last week. And Doug, who are some of those names that people are chasing? I know that people were a little bit worrisome about maybe the quality of players, the quality of names in this list, but who are some of the guys that guys are chasing so far?
Yeah, I mean, without minor league baseball, as we mentioned last week, it was kind of tough to decide who's going to be the big names coming out of this set. And, you know, it's beginning to kind of look a little bit like the 2016 Bowman Chrome, where we didn't know much about Soto. We didn't know much about Tatis other than his name. And you got some big names that are emerging. That first name, that first big hit that people are latching onto early is Bayron Laura for the Rangers. So a guy seems to be a really big power guy. He actually was good enough that the Topps put him in Bowman Transcendent, which is kind of technically his first auto, but you know, the first Bowman will always hold the candle higher than anything else. So his most sought after card will be this 2020 Bowman Chrome version, and he's got all the colors. As you can see here, somebody had a gold that had a 5,000 or best offer, and it looks like it got picked off on eBay already. The Rangers really are the powerhouse if you can try to land them in a random or buy them outright. I know they're going to be pretty pricey because they have Luis Angel Acuña as well, and you may recognize the name. That's because that's because it's his brother. So I think based on name alone, the talent in the same genes is already building the hype on him. And you could see a recent base auto pushing $300 here, and you know, colors going for even more. And then you got Luis Matos for the Giants, number 9 ranked prospect for the Giants, who's, you know, $150 for a base auto ain't too shabby. A lot of people believe in him and the Giants. Maybe the Giants turning this around. They're still, you know, kind of hanging in there on that last playoff spot for this year. So other names to note, Lewin Diaz is a good one. The Eric Pena for the Royals is another name to note. But we've been doing Bowman Chrome. I did 10 cases on Friday, and Conrad did a bunch throughout the weekend, and we've got a bunch more on the schedule for this week. So if you want to get your fill on Bowman Chrome, go to mojobreak.com to jump into one of those breaks.
And as we talked a little bit about last week's episode, there are a lot of guys like Lewin Diaz who are playing in the majors right now almost because they have to. There's nowhere else for them to play, where they're too good for that taxi squad, but maybe just not quite good enough for a major league squad. But again, this is such a crazy season with so many players, no minor league season, so many players with nowhere to play. So there is the potential here, even with just a week to go in the regular season, that a lot of these guys could increase their value. And a guy like Diaz specifically, Marlins look like they're pretty much set for a postseason spot. And their fate is in their hands right now. So that could be very interesting to see some of these guys who would in a regular year be playing in double A, triple A ball, not seeing any postseason play. This year could see that value skyrocket.
Absolutely.
That'd be really interesting to see. And one more about Acuña. I do always feel like there's seldom been two brothers playing in the game at the same time who are equally as good as each other,
sure.
You know? So I would love to see it.
What do you mean? Billy Ripken wasn't as good as Cal?
Yeah, just a shade under. I'm trying to think who would be. Maybe the Giles brothers. Remember Marcus and Brian Giles? They were about, like, Brian was probably the better of the two, but I remember Marcus had some good years.
Maybe Yadier and Benji?
The Molinas, yeah. Probably the Molinas catching legacy. Yadi is probably the best of the group. I think a future Hall of Famer. But yeah, it's always like one guy. I think that you have the Seager brothers right now. Mm-hmm. That's pretty even, I would say. But it will be interesting to see if Acuña can break out of that, or if he's just going to be clouded in the shadow of his brother, who has been just on a tear.
Well, hopefully he hustles out fly balls, you know. So that's kind of one of the drawbacks.
Hey,
to,
if you're dripping in the swag, it's all good.
Yeah, you
got
to practice.
Acuña's got it, man. He does. He's fun to watch. He's been really fun.
You do have to practice your home run trot, even if it sometimes bounces off the wall.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to talk about playoff teams next week. The postseason will be starting. That we're going to talk a little bit about that format later on. Just a crazy amount of postseason baseball coming your way soon. But let's talk about some of the disappointing teams and players. The guys who either are not going to see as much playing time come postseason, or teams that are going to be left out in the cold for this 16-team postseason. It has been a strange year, especially because the defending world champions look like they are going to be left out in the dust like pretty easily. They're just done for right now. But let's talk about three players that I think we should focus on. Guys who were top prospects at one point, guys who certainly in the hobby people were chasing early on in their careers and had some great moments throughout their careers, but have really fallen on hard times here in 2020. I want to start off with Javier Baez, who it may be a little unfair that I'm pinpointing him, because the Cubs as a whole, as good as that team has been, the guys who are producing for that team are not the guys you would expect. Anthony Rizzo's had a bit of an off year. Chris Bryant has dealt with injuries all year. The numbers look really bad for him, but there is the excuse, I guess, that injuries have played a part. Javier Baez has played a majority of the season, and through 52 games right now, he is having a really rough go. Among the worst numbers for any qualified player right now in Major League Baseball, batting just .205 and a .606 OPS overall. This was an all-star, just last year. And one of the most exciting players in all of baseball, played a huge role for that 2016 Cubs team. He's just 27 years old. So, Doug, do you think that Javier Baez can break out of this? Again, in a 52, you can have a bad 52-game stretch in a regular season mm-hmm. and break out of it, and those numbers can come back to normal. So it is a little, like I said, maybe a little unfair to pinpoint some of this out for some of these guys, but it is interesting to think, is this maybe, you know, he's had a lot of problems with plate discipline, mm-hmm. so maybe this is a sign of things to come for Javier Baez, or do you think that next year he fixes things?
I think he fixes things, and you want to talk about swag and drip. I mean, this is one guy that's got that swing, that's got that bat flip that, you know, just looks very polished out there, and I just think, if this was 162 games, I think he would have turned it around and he would have got his average up. He seems like a player that if you follow his career kind of does come around towards the end of the season. I know it's the end of the season now, but technically it's the beginning of the season. One thing to note, if you look at his Bowman Chrome, I was actually blown away that a recent Bowman Chrome sold for $96. We're talking about a guy in the offseason that was steadily around $300 to $400. So I think right now, maybe wait until the offseason and see if they dip a little bit, but I think that's a strong buy. I think the guy, potentially a great five-tool player, he makes the highlight reels and with what he does, and I can't believe that his price is in. It's a 2011 Bowman Chrome was what his first auto is. So, like I said, it's dipped quite a bit with his struggles, and I think that people are focusing in on other players, and people are also buyers and sellers are caught up in the moment of the players right now, and I don't think we can take this season completely serious from an investment standpoint. So usually the time to buy, now this is a little bit weird of a season, is around December. It might still ring true when baseball is kind of not on anybody's mind. It's basketball, it's football, and nobody's buying baseball. I think it's a perfect time to stock up on Javier Baez autos, first Bowman's.
Yeah, I think Baez, I think I kind of agree with you and maybe disagree a little bit. I think that he is a guy who is not this bad, But I also think there was always signs that he would regress pretty hard at some point. Like I said, his on-base percentage has always like been in the low 300s, maybe mid mm-hmm. when he was at his best. Not the most disciplined guy at the plate. A great defensive player. Just a thrill to watch defensively. But, yeah, I think this regression was kind of coming. But at the same time, I still think that he's got quite a few years left of really good ball. Maybe not all-star MVP level, maybe mm-hmm. like we thought. This whole Cubs team really is such a strange team this year where, like I said, you've got maybe the three most important players. If you went into the season and said, who are the most important players for the Cubs? You'd probably say Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, and Anthony Rizzo. Mm-hmm. All three aren't really producing right now. And they're the number one team in that division at the moment. So,
and I mean, one thing to keep in mind with investing in his cards too is that he plays for Chicago. Yep. He plays for the Cubs,
that's
which
always
have
a plus.
Huge fan base. And one thing to note: next year, the National is going back to Chicago. So obviously, the National got canceled yep. this year. It was going to be in Atlantic City. It's going to be in Chicago. So if you load it up and he's playing decently. You're going to be at the place where there's going to be the most Cubs fans to sell your cards. So that's something to also keep in mind is the team on what team the guy is when he's when they're struggling to keep in mind about their fan base.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, it just dawned on me, is I believe Baez is a free agent after the 2021 season where there's just an incredible class of shortstops and middle infielders that year with him and Lindor, I believe, Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, all going to be free agents in the same offseason. So this could also be a guy you buy low on now, and I could see him having a big, big contract here. As players often do, they always have that big contract year or big year when they're about to go onto the free agent market and sign for big money. So that could be a thing to look towards for next season, that in a full year where he needs to get paid that offseason, could have a big, big year for the Cubs.
Right.
Next up, the Pittsburgh Pirates have been, remember when the Pirates had a nice little run in the early 2010s, and
yep.
we thought, what a great story. Andrew McCutchen and Pedro Alvarez and Gerrit Cole was part of those first few teams. You thought, man, baseball's back in Pittsburgh. Well, that was just just a little stop on the way to
mediocrity.
Yeah, exactly. Just a quick little stop on their road to mediocrity and terrible baseball. It's been another rough season for Pittsburgh. But a bright spot last year was Josh Bell, first base prospect who for years was highly touted in that Pirates system and had himself a breakout year last year. His first half was incredible. Went to the All-Star game, had a rough second half, and it feels like those struggles have extended into this season. He's batting just .230, just 7 home runs through 51 games. To me, I think that Bell could be a guy who maybe gets you 25, maybe 30 home runs in a good year, but I don't think he's ever going to quite replicate that run he had in 2019. Unfortunately, if you were a guy who was hanging on to him last year and maybe waiting to sell, thinking that he's got a few years ahead of him, I'm not quite so sure that those years are coming.
Yeah, and it hurts me to say this because he was one of the guys back in 2013 that we were able to do a break with us in Arizona as part of our spring training fall league video, which is if you search it's Mojo Break Arizona Fall League. We had him, Tyler Glass, now a couple other players out there, CJ Edwards, and I really liked his personality. He was
really
such a nice
guy.
Really kind of was took a big interest in the cards. He actually wound up pulling a Mike Trout auto, got super excited. I mean, it was just a great time. But I think with him, there's a couple factors against him if you're thinking about investing. For one, I think he's a terrible defender. He's had some errors over the years that have been really bad. And, I mean, first base is not known for the glove, but I think, there's going to be coaches and things like that that if he's not hitting and then he's not defending, he's not going to stay on the field as much. Or there maybe, we'll get a guy that can, be a better defender and hit .230. So, I hope that he'll be able to turn it around because he does have some good power, but I think he was a prospect in 2012. He's not on the right team, so it'd be kind of really a long shot, I think, for him to pick it back up.
Yeah, I think the best bet for him is if next season he fixes his swing over the offseason, he gets back to normal, starts hitting the ball for power again, Maybe he gets traded in midseason to a bigger market. You know, that might be the best
bet. You're exactly right. Because, who else is in that lineup that's really going to put eyeballs on him, you know?
Right. I've been following Brian Reynolds because I wanted him to be in the Giants farm system. But even he's having a really struggling at the plate after a great first year with Pittsburgh. So I think really at this point for Bell, it's hope that he can fix things next season in the first half. And maybe he gets dealt to a contender, a big city, where maybe that value has a chance to go up again. Well, the last player I want to talk about, and really just the team in general, about specifically how the last offseason affected the value and the outlook for card collectors for the Houston Astros. And I think the poster boy for that this season, no doubt, is Jose Altuve. Now, the Astros are right there in a playoff spot. They could be making it in. They've had so many injuries, though. So it has not been an easy road to success for them in 2020. And Jose Altuve has just not put it together at the plate. I mean, every year you just kind of assume Altuve is going to be a 300 hitter. He's going to get near 200 hits. He's going to get about 15 to 20 homers. And he's going to be one of the best players in all of baseball. And this year, through 41 games, he's batting .213, a .590 OPS. He's only got 3 home runs right now. If there's any guy who has really worn it when it comes to this Astros cheating scandal, it feels like Jose Altuve. He's 30 years old now. He was a guy that before all this cheating scandal stuff happened, I thought, man, 5 more years of Altuve at the level he's at, he's a Hall of Famer, no doubt. I really didn't even have a doubt he'd be a Hall of Famer. And the way he's playing right now, and I know, again, short season, things can change next year, but this is there's a lot more going on here than just bad on the field play. I think this whole cheating scandal is really taking a toll on the team and some of its best players.
Yeah, I mean, it really kind of seems like you said it the right, is he's wearing it. I mean, it's like the guilt is on him for the season, the way he's performing.
Yeah, and he's not wearing that mic, though, apparently.
Exactly, you know, right? I'm sure he's getting patted down before each game. But, I mean, yeah, I can't really – I mean, if you look at – he's an interesting case when it comes to the cards, because he did not have an – first auto. He had a first chrome in 2010, but people tend to gravitate to his 2011 Topps update card, which also happens to be the same year that Trout's in, so you won't even be able to touch a box if you're, you know, chasing him, which I'm sure you're chasing Trout instead. But I would wait just to see, because there is a chance that he could do something in the postseason and then maybe just try to sell off then. But I definitely wouldn't be buying. I may hold tight on what I have and see if there's some, you know, they're sitting in the sixth position right now. Maybe there's some kind of postseason magic that happens. And, you know, he bats 400 or 500 in the playoffs or something. And then maybe people forget. But I think that cloud around that team may never go away, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think it's going to affect the values of guys like him, like Bregman, Correa, these guys who were, I mean, especially Bregman and Correa, who were guys who, early in their careers and early in their professional careers, were guys that were highly sought after for collectors. So I think this is really going to negatively affect them for a while, unless they, you know, I think next season is big. If they can go out there now, presumably, if everything goes well with fans in the stands again, and they're going to hear it, a year off is not going to lessen that. I think we know that from the steroid era, that, you know, especially watching Barry Bonds every day, it did not just end after Game of Shadows came out. Like, it was every year of his career until he retired. That guy heard it on the road, and the Astros are going to hear it on the road until all of these guys retire. So how that plays with their collecting, you know, how much they'll be sought after, I think you are going to start to see it go down. But if Bregman goes out next year and hits 45 home runs, and maybe that all changes and we all just move on. And we don't,
you know, on second thought, history repeats itself. So if they do make the playoffs, I forget that they have Dusty Baker as their manager. So you may want to sell on the first good game that they have, because at some point they're going to find a way to lose the series that they're in.
You know what, though? He doesn't have the toothpick this year. Maybe, like, the toothpick was bad luck. And I think because of COVID, he's kicked the toothpick away.
Gotcha.
So maybe no toothpick.
He's got the one toothpick a day habit now, as opposed to 5 or 6 of
right,
them.
Right, so. Exactly. Yeah, chomping through them during the game. So maybe that plays a factor. I don't know. But let's now focus on some of the more disappointing teams. We've mentioned the Astros, who are still in a playoff spot. It's weird to think. I do kind of feel like they are in the disappointing team category, but They're a playoff spot, so things can happen. It's going to be a weird postseason, and we'll talk a little bit about it. But let's start off with a few teams and a couple of players from those teams to keep an eye on. But specifically, looking ahead to next season, three teams that are they going to turn it around, or is this year just a sign that things need to start changing in those cities? And let's start with the defending world champions, the Washington Nationals, who, let's face it, things just kind of never got off the ground with this team this season. When you start off with a biblical thunderstorm on your opening night against the Yankees, maybe it's not a good sign of things to come with this team. Steven Strasburg got hurt really early on. Juan Soto missed about a week because of a false positive COVID test. Ever since then, he's been lighting the world on fire, but it's been the pitching. Second worst ERA as a team in the National League. Juan Soto and Trey Turner are both having great years, but the starters, ever since Strasburg got hurt, Scherzer's had some great moments and had some rough moments. I'm not going to say he's showing his age because I'm never going to question Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
but after Scherzer and Corbin, there's really nothing in that starting rotation. That said, a healthy Strasburg next year, with Scherzer there, I'm definitely not counting this team out.
No, and Soto's just getting better. I mean, one thing to keep in mind is how young he is. I think we all kind of think that he's older than, like, all these other guys that are coming in the league, and the fact he's
younger.
Not.
Yeah.
He's younger. So he came up when he was 19. So, you know, he's just going to get better and better. And, you know, I think this is just kind of a fluky season, like you said, with the Thunder. Also, the most valuable or most talked about card was the first pitch of the first game with the Topps Now card. So, you know, that's kind of seems like the highlight of the national season in terms of cards for this moment. But, you know, I think next year they're going to be right back in the swing of things. And, you know, I know we talk about football having the Super Bowl hangover. Maybe it applies to baseball this year.
I think so. I think there's definitely something to be said about that, especially in a long postseason. And Strasburg especially, remember, his whole career was defined before this postseason by the Nationals put him on the shelf for that first postseason run because they didn't want to mess with it. They didn't want to get him hurt. And he really went the extra mile last year. And you have to think maybe that plays a part, plus, of course, the weird start spring training, stop spring training, go to summer camp, and then try to get back into shape in 3 weeks. Like, that's going to play a role.
And he had, Tommy John very early in his career.
Right, exactly. So it's always going to be a concern. But, I think this team's back next year. And, boy, you want to talk about – you've got maybe the most exciting young player in all of baseball on your team. And your biggest card contribution this year is Dr. Fauci throwing out the first pitch. No disrespect to Dr. Fauci, but come on, you got Juan Soto, man.
Well, I think it's just a sign of the times for collectors where, like, I think, you know, 20 years from now, you know, when we're not even really talking about this anymore, you go through your card collection, and that reminds you of 2020, you know?
Exactly. As if I need a reminder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One quick aside before we move on to the next team. I was comparing Juan Soto's values right now to Fernando Tatis, and not saying that, you know, Tatis has kind of slowed down a little bit after that scorching start. This last month, he's kind of come back to earth, although he's right up there, I think, with MVP candidates, and he is, for many people, the most exciting young player in the game. But I did find it interesting that for a guy like Soto, who's got a World Series title, who had an incredible run last year, who is leading the National League in most offensive categories at the moment in terms of batting average, on base, slugging, OPS, all that, they were either at about equal value for similar cards, or Soto was just under that. So I know Soto's still a really tough card to get your hands on, I think, if you're just getting into the hobby, but, like, to me, I feel like if I have a choice of am I going to grab Tatis or Soto, it's a tough choice, but I think I might side Soto because I think he's a better value at this point.
I think so too. And you know, he's got a World Series championship under his belt, which, you know, Tatis, hopefully they'll get there. They have a lot of talent there.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes in baseball it doesn't matter because you got Buster Posey versus Mike Trout, and obviously the values aren't even close. Right. You have one guy that's won three World Series and one guy that hasn't won anything. But, I think I agree with you there. I can't even debate that I think I'm going to choose the Soto over the Tatis.
Yeah, and I think the difference with Soto, too, is it's, you know, Soto has got a talent level where I think the sky is the limit. Same with Tatis. But you add the World Series title, I think that, to me, that kind of seals the deal.
You know, it's kind of interesting when it, in terms of, and I just looked this up, in terms of like power in MLB, you know, we talk about cards, and usually the long ball is what's going to sell cards, right?
Yeah.
If you look at the leaders, you've got Luke Voit, you have Jose Abreu, yeah. Mookie Betts, Nelson Cruz, Duvall. So those guys are all not young. I mean, they're not old. You got Luke Voit's 29. Abreu's probably around that age. But it's almost like, you know, maybe these young guys aren't, you know, it's not long enough season for them to get used to it, where these guys that have had the 162-game seasons under their belts are playing short-term a little bit better. They're maybe taking more chances at the plate and hitting these home runs. Maybe you're seeing that. Because you usually have a younger guy kind of on that list. I mean, you even go down farther. You got Manny Machado, Mike Trout, Cole Calhoun, Marcel Osuna. These guys that have been playing, you know, many, many, many seasons. That are maybe, like I said, maybe a little bit more seasoned for a shortened season.
Well, I think it's probably two things. One, a lot of young guys who you're seeing went through the system really fast because they kind of had to.
Right.
Made their debuts a little earlier than they were expecting. So, but at the beginning of the season, you saw like Kyle Lewis and you saw Fernando Tatis right there at the very, very top. Mm-hmm. And again, both those guys are still having great years. Kyle Lewis is probably your shoe-in for your AL Rookie of the Year. Tatis is probably going to get at least a top five finish in the MVP voting. Machado might be a better candidate now with the Padres, the way he's been hitting.
Yeah, he's been on fire.
But I think that a lot of these other guys, like you mentioned, Voit, Cruz, Betts, they're in that, like, think if it was in the time frame of a regular season, they're hitting mid-season stride right now. That's like Memorial Day weekend in a regular season right now, where everybody's just like finally everyone's feeling comfortable, and the veteran players are really starting to get in the swing of things. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing here at the very end of the season, is a lot of these veteran guys are really starting to feel it at the plate. And the young guys maybe let it all out in that first month.
Mm-hmm. So. And you mean, even look at the Rookie of the Year last year, Pete Alonso, who's right. batting .207 at this point.
Rough year.
He's had a rough year. I mean, he's got 12 home runs, but it's like, you know, he's looking, you know, and I hate to keep throwing Adam Dunn under the bus, but it really – kind of seems like a guy that's going to hit a lot of home runs, but if you're batting .200,
yeah,
what good is that?
And it's making matters worse there. I think maybe we'll talk about it a little bit next week too. Some guys that are not going to play the postseason that I think are interesting to watch. Dominic Smith is having a really good year in New York as the DH. And that was the guy who was a more highly touted prospect than Pete Alonso
when
he was first coming up. So it's interesting to see what is New York going to do here, because you're not going to have DH probably next season, maybe you have it the year after. But at least for a year, what do you do? Do you believe in Pete Alonso? Do you believe in Dominic Smith? Do you try to trade somebody? I think that's going to be a really interesting situation in New
York. Yeah, I mean, and one more point to add to the Mets. I think Dominic Smith might have been around when Ike Davis was the first baseman.
Oh, yeah.
I almost feel like Ike Davis and Pete Alonso are kind of having the same path at this point, where a hot start, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. Pete Alonso's start was a lot hotter than Ike Davis's.
50 bombs, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot hotter, but like the second season fall off is becoming very Ike Davis-like.
Yeah, yeah. There is a feeling of like maybe some of the scouts knew what they were talking about with Alonso, why he wasn't up there with the top prospects in all of baseball. I'll still give him a shot. You hit 50 bombs in the big leagues, you're doing something right.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Let's move on to a guy who could definitely hit 50 bombs, Mike Trout and the Los Angeles Angels. It's same old story, same as it ever was with the Los Angeles Angels. Another year of a lot of hype. Joe Maddon brought in as the manager. Anthony Rendon signed in the offseason. Joe Adell gets called up. Mike Trout is Mike Trout. And nothing. They're just kind of they're a below average team once again. They're not awful, but they're not great. The weird thing is that they actually, like, I think their run differential is better than the Seattle Mariners, who are ahead of them. But the big key for them has been, I couldn't even believe the stat. I knew the bullpen was not good for them. In 22 save opportunities, that bullpen has only made 9 saves.
Oh, wow.
Awful. That's it. Yeah. I mean, that, to me, is why that team's not doing good, because they're hitting fine. For the most part, they're hitting fine. Anthony Rendon was injured to start the season. He's been good. Mike Trout is in a quote-unquote down year right now. Well, here's what a down year for Mike Trout sounds like. How about 16 homers, .292 average, .611 slugging, a 1,005 OPS? pretty good down year.
Yeah, I mean, and they're really only four games behind Houston, so it's like, you know, those save opportunities, if they would have gotten a few more, I mean, if they would have got four or five more, they'd be right, maybe right sniffing the end of the eighth seed there. So it's tough. It's frustrating.
Yeah, so to me, I think if this team gets pitching, that's what they need. And Dylan Bundy has been good for them. The starters have been okay for the most part. I think that this is a team and an organization that has never been shy about spending a lot of money. I mean, basically, since the Pujols deal, it feels like they just snag every big free agent. It doesn't usually work, but they usually go after them, and it works. Pujols, Josh Hamilton, remember that deal? You want to talk, the Pujols deal was rough. The Hamilton deal is still is maybe even worse than that. Rendon seems to be working, and Trout, of course, got the biggest contract in Major League history. So they're not afraid to spend money. They just got to spend on bullpen and maybe another starter. And in an American League West where the Astros are maybe on the downturn and the Mariners are not quite there yet, I'm not sure I'm totally in on them for a full season quite yet, the opportunity is there for them to be the second team in that division along with the Oakland A's. And again, the A's, who knows? Things are are always changing in Oakland. Simeon's going to be a free agent. Matt Olson and Matt Chapman possibly soon after that. So there's still an opportunity to strike here with the right moves, but it almost has the feeling of like...
Yeah, it's almost like Mike Trout is like the Barry Sanders of baseball.
There's almost a cursed feeling around this team right now.
Yeah, it's like Barry Sanders is the best player in the league, but the team never could win games. Yeah. And you know, he would be out there running around from 10 guys and we'd be blocked. So it's like, but at least the Angels, in terms of comparing them to the Lions, I know we're crossing sports here, at least the Angels are trying, but it just seems like they miss on every, like you said, Josh Hamilton. Pujols has an epic failure, but probably 29 of their teams would have signed Pujols at that point.
Yeah.
And it's just, man, he just can't get somebody around him, and it's a shame.
Yeah, it really is. Hopefully Joe Adell, I know Joe Adell has had a bit of a rough start with them, but that's a guy who is good enough to be the guy right in the middle of that order with Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon. Obviously, if Rendon and Adell can be the sidekicks for Mike Trout, and then they can add at least one more guy. We were talking before we started, it felt like Gerrit Cole to me was the guy who had to be in Anaheim and playing with the Angels, and it just felt like such a no-brainer, and it didn't happen. He goes to New York instead. They need that move. They've made all these big splashy moves, but the one move they haven't made is for a starting pitcher. So if they can do that and they can get some bullpen help, I think this team is in a good position next year. But again, I'm still always hesitant to buy in on the Angels, just even though they got the best player in baseball.
Right.
And lastly, the Arizona Diamondbacks, which I'll admit right now, Doug, I was all in on the Diamondbacks. And it's not just because they got Madison Bumgarner, who we saw just do incredible things out of tall tales with the San Francisco Giants. But I really liked the young pitching staff that they had around him. Zach Gallen, who's actually had some nice outings. Luke Weaver, a guy I liked in the offseason. Robbie Ray was a guy I thought, hey, you know what? If he can fix things up a little bit, that's a guy who's going to get you 200 strikeouts. And everything fell apart. Bumgarner looked really rough and had a good outing over the weekend. That was really nice to see. Robbie Ray has been traded after he has yet to be able to figure things out and fix his problems. And on top of that, a lineup that I was very impressed with. I liked the addition of Starling Marte. Just never quite came together. Ketel Marte, David Peralta, Eduardo Escobar, all not hitting for power. The team only has one qualified batter batting over 300, and that is Starling Marte, who is, as you know, no longer a member of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's with Miami. This one, I don't know. That's another team with, like, the Diamondbacks. I can never quite tell. Are they coming or are they going? Selling or are they buying? They were in a weird in-between position this offseason, but it kind of felt like they were going for it this year. What do you think? Do you think they reassess this offseason and maybe start from scratch again or try to go for it next year?
Yeah, I mean, they have a pretty good prospect organization, a pretty good system going on in their farm. There's a lot of big names that that can, you know, contribute. But I think at this point they probably already know that obviously they're out of it, so they're going to probably have to reassess next year. But there's a lot of talent in that farm system. Names like Geraldo Perdomo, Christian Robinson, these guys can come up and contribute. Madison Bumgarner looked like a good deal. They got him for less than people expected Bumgarner to go, but he has probably his worst year of his career. And looks like the age is finally catching up to him, so that didn't work out. You know, Grinke wasn't who they thought he would be, and they shipped him out of town. It's just like almost kind of similar to the Angels, where they take shots and they miss. I mean, they had J.D. Martinez, who had the best year of his career, and then they can't sign him, and he goes to Boston. You know, so it's just kind of – it's got to be definitely frustrating for Diamondback fans.
Yeah, there's been a lot of bright spots here and there, but it's just like a flash, you know, and it goes away real fast. You know what? I thought there was an opportunity here to really do something for a couple of years for Arizona, but Padres are here to stay. The Dodgers are clearly here to stay. I think the Rockies are going to be more of a factor in the next couple of years. I think the Giants are going to be more of a factor in the next couple of years as those prospects start getting called up. I'm just not quite sure there's the room right now for the Diamondbacks. Maybe they can see themselves as like that fourth team eventually, third or fourth team in that division, but... it's going to be a tough offseason for them. Like you said, though, they've got enough prospects in the system where they could ship out some of these veterans who, you know what, if they put a guy like David Peralta or Eduardo Escobar on the trade market, especially for Escobar, as rough as the season they've had, there's going to be a lot of teams calling and a lot of teams really interested in those players. They're good quality major league players when they put it all together. So I could see it being another offseason of wheeling and dealing in Arizona, trying to figure out creative solutions to bring up some of those prospects while bringing in veterans that can really fortify that team. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with a lot of young talent coming up with some of these other teams, I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea for Arizona to hit the reset button yet again. And I know that might be frustrating for Diamondback fans to hear. It's been a constant reset for the last few years. It's just been no stability with that franchise, it feels like. Well, enough talking disappointment. Let's talk about some winners. Let's talk postseason baseball, and it's right around the corner. We're 1 week away. We already know that the format is going to be a lot different this year. 16 teams. You're going to have 4 3-game series in each league, where they just announced officially. So the home team for those 3-game sets is going to be the higher seed. All 3 games are going to be at that home park. And then after that, we are going to have sort of bubble leagues, if you will, a la the NHL and the NBA. The American League is going to be playing in California. They're going to play at Petco Park in Dodger Stadium. The National League is going to play in Texas. They're going to play at Minute Maid Park and the brand new Globe Life Field. And eventually, the World Series is going to be in Arlington, the NLCS, ALCS, NLCS in Arlington, ALCS in San Diego, World Series also in Arlington, as they have finally confirmed that. So it'll be interesting to see neutral site baseball in the postseason. There have been rumblings, maybe fans, I'm not quite sure. That would be interesting to do. Maybe in the 3-game sets, but I mean, once it's like a neutral site in Texas, I can't imagine they'll do it there, right?
Well, Boston had a fan over the weekend. I don't know if you've seen that. There was a guy that
I don't think I did. That snuck in.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. He was kind of behind the I think it was center field wall somehow, and he was yelling something. He threw a hat out on the field and completely stopped the game. I mean, the pitcher turned around. I forget who was pitching, but turned around and was looking at him, and they stopped the game, and I think they got him out of there. I don't know how he got in.
A Boston fan, you know what? The way their season's been going, I imagine one guy just said, enough's enough.
Yeah.
I'm not letting them take this in an empty stadium. I'm voicing my opinion.
Exactly.
You know? So I guess so he's allowed in stadiums. Brett Favre also allowed football games anyway.
Brett Favre just chewing chips. I mean, I love Brett Favre, and you know, it's like everybody was wearing masks around him, but he was just casually chewing chips, you know, just walking down with the Buccaneers Tom Brady face shirt.
I was going to say, I have to get that shirt.
That was a cool shirt.
Yeah, but yeah, a little strange to be like, what's happening here? Anyway, back to baseball. We're going to get neutral sites, World Series, and postseason, 16-team postseason. Sounds like, hey, it's a one-off. It'll be fun. Let's enjoy it while it lasts. Well, not so fast, because it sounds like, if Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball owners have their way, this is going to be the new normal. Apparently, Rob Manfred spoke to, I believe he was at a, he was making a speech at a university or was talking with reporters and mentioned that he is all in and the owners like the idea of a 16-team postseason going forward. This is, frankly, a bit of a surprise. There's, I mean, I'm not surprised that postseason is getting expanded. I think that's something that has always been on the table. But 16 teams already felt like a lot. You kind of got it for this season because it's a shorter season. Give more teams a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Expand the playoffs. I get that. More revenue, yada, yada, yada. But in a 162-game season, 16 teams feels like overkill, personally.
Yeah, I kind of struggle with both because I do a lot of times, especially like the year that if my team's out of it, which, you know, a lot of times they have been, I don't really pay attention to baseball as much until the postseason. Then I'll watch like as many games as I can because, you know, it's exciting. It's postseason baseball. So having more of it might be a good thing. But on the flip side of it, I look at like the 93 Giants who won, I think it was 102 games. Yep. And the Braves, which were in the division at the same time, won 103. There was zero wild cards at that point, and the Giants didn't make it. So you can kind of look at all those. You know, I hate to go back in time, but you can make an argument that like how many teams would have had a shot if they would have had this format that maybe missed out on winning some championships. And plus you have postseason records that come into play that these guys might be playing more games. So all these records are going to be just demolished. So I don't know. But you look at the other sports, you know, and they're all 8-team in each divisions as well. So I get it, and I get it from a rating standpoint, and maybe baseball's like the more games, the better. I mean, I almost feel like with 162 games and then a 16-team playoff that you're just have year-round baseball at this point.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I'm kind of a baseball traditionalist. I like small postseasons because to me it means, and I've realized now to kind of connect this to football in a little bit, way, I finally understand where college football fans come from when they say, we don't need a college football playoff because the regular season is the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought, come on, like get over that. Like playoffs are fun. But now I'm like, no, 162 games should mean something. There's a reason we play this many games. There's a reason why so few times in Major League Baseball history does a losing team or a team even like when I see the 2006 Cardinals is the team that I almost feel like infuriates me, and I know nobody else cares, but it always infuriates me that like a team with like 84 wins won the World Series.
Yep.
It just blech. I don't
and
like
I think
it.
You're gonna have that. I mean, just look at like now. I mean, you could like have a team that with 20 games left is 60-80. They just got absolutely dominated through the whole season. They win 20 games in a row, get the A seed, and then let's just say they play a team that won 110 games,
right?
And they knock them out.
Yeah, God forbid a team that like there's going to be a losing team that makes the playoffs. You know, like when you have a 16-team postseason like this, I feel like a losing team is going to eventually make the playoffs. We've seen in football all the time. We're just desensitized to it at this point. Like, oh yeah, 7-9 teams probably coming out of the, you know, like the AFC South is just constantly 7-9 and they make the playoffs. And now at this point, we just are like, yeah, it is what it is. I don't want that to happen to baseball.
Well, one thing to note, they're going to be doing that. If they go with this whole theory, then there's no one game playoff, correct?
That is the one thing I like. I'm not a fan of the one-game playoff, again, because I think that the 162-game season is there for a reason. At the end of 162, you can tell who are the good teams and who are the bad teams. And I think that one-game playoff kind of just throws everything up in the air.
Yeah, because that would be brutal if, like I said, like an 80 and 82 team play a 110 team and then one game and that's it.
And then it's over. I think there is a way to expand playoffs while still making sure that the teams that did the best in the regular season are rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea of a team winning 100 games and playing a 78-win team.
Yeah, can't they have a bye, like the first seed of some sort gets? I mean, if you get the most wins, you should like move on to the next round.
And this is where, I think about these scenarios probably too much, but this is always the plan that I've had in mind is that let's split back into two divisions per league where you've got an AL and an NL East and West. And each of those division winners gets a bye.
Yeah.
And then you've got four wild card teams they duke it out. Three-game series, incredible wild card weekend where those teams get the, like they have it now, the three-game playoffs, and then it's back to normal. And you could even do, like, if you really want to incentivize it, you could be like, the division winners get the bye, plus they host all possible five games of the division series next time out. So you really are rewarding them for winning that division. It's really important to win that division. I think that, to me, is the most fair way to make sure that teams that had a good regular season are rewarded while also making baseball more exciting, more accessible, more fans are involved, more people are interested.
Yeah,
and you still got that exciting three-game
set. At this
set.
Point, like, let's just say you're – I don't know, you're on a tear, your team's on a tear, and you're 90 and 30 or something. I know, which is not going to happen.
Right,
but let's
right,
just
right.
say you could literally, like, let's not even play. Let's literally, like, when the September call-ups happen, let's just rest everybody for 3 weeks because we're already in the playoffs and it doesn't matter. We're going to play somebody. So there's really, I mean, the incentive maybe would be the home field advantage, like you mentioned, but, like, there's really not a huge incentive to just keep winning games if you're already in it.
Yeah, exactly. I think there are too many problems here. I hope this is just sort of a test balloon thing where maybe Rob Manfred says, hey, owners really like it, these 16-team playoffs. I saw some poll that I think it was in the Baseball Prospectus subscribers. There was something like – it was a ton of votes on this poll, like 7,000 or 10,000 votes, and 74% said, no, I don't like a 16-team playoff. There was another poll with a lot of votes that said like 85% of them don't like it. So clearly, the most dedicated fans don't like this.
And it's hard to ask the teams because, of course, if you're like, you know, the Giants right now are like, yeah, let's do it. You
right.
know, like whether like a team like the A's or the Yankees or well, not the Yankees, but like, well, the Yankees are getting back up there. But like Tampa Bay are like, keep it the way that it is. You know, so it's always it's kind of based on that time on how your talent level is for your team to say, yeah, we want the eight teams in our division or in our league to make it. Or no, we only want four because we're the best team. So we don't want to have to play more games, you know. So
I think that this is just I have totally turned on Rob Manfred where I just thought he was just a standard commissioner, nothing good or bad to say about him. And I think he has done a lot to hurt the sport in the last year. And
yeah, I never thought I'd really like Bud Selig as much as I do right now.
I'm missing Bud Selig. That's bad, man.
I know. After that,
is that bad.
After just not even giving Barry Bonds, like not showing up to any games, and
right.
you know, saying Hank Aaron's still the home run king, and you know, I know he had a personal friendship with him, but you know, like I thought, but I see how he led baseball. It was more of an iron fist, like kind of like not like should we do this? So, like I feel like Manfred's like. Can we do this? Should we do this? Let's try that. You know, it's like you almost have to just be like, nope, that's the way it goes.
Just too much tinkering. And to me, the 16-team playoff would just be such a watered-down version of the sport. And I'm not a fan of it, you know. So let's reward the good teams. We can have, you know, to put a bow on it, you can have playoff expansion while still rewarding the best teams in baseball. As long as you're doing that, then I'm all for expansion. But I think 16 teams is not a way you do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to wrap things up for this week. Next week, we're going to get in-depth on those postseason matchups, go over each series, some guys to watch, and if you're a collector, guys to keep an eye on for the entire postseason run, maybe guys to buy low on now, and maybe, who knows, they are holding.
And a little teaser, how did you do on your football picks? Because we got the Blitz coming up this week.
I did pretty good.
Okay, well, we'll have to see. We'll have to talk about that on, I think we're going to do it on Thursday.
Yeah. Like so. I said, I'm doing pretty good because I want that Tom Brady shirt because he helped me this week.
Yeah,
go Bucks. Until next time, make sure to check us out on the Mojo Break Media channel and more that we've got on this channel as well. Mojo Break Card Shop for your personal breaks and more. And, of course, our Mojo Break main feed on YouTube on MojoBreak.com. For Doug, I am Cody, and we will see you next time on the Mojo Break Dugout Session.